It's time for Food Friday. Let's say you're about to eat a burrito. Do you ever think about the science that went into making it? Is the tortilla sufficiently holding the contents together? Are the ingredients arranged a certain way to ensure maximum flavor distribution? And what's the best angle at which to take that first bite? Well, these are the food details that our next guest ponders every day. Dan Pasherman joins us now. He's the creator and host of the James Beard Award-nominated food-centric podcast. It's called The Sporkful. His new book is called Eat More Better, How to Make Every Bite More Delicious. It combines science and humor to teach us how to love food more. Dan, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, Veronica.
Well, Dan, you call yourself a foodie rather than, you don't call yourself a foodie, I should say, but you prefer the term prolific eater. What's the difference?
I'm not against foodies per se, but I feel like eater is a more universal term. Like, we're all eaters. I think foodie kind of denotes a certain amount of pretension, and it also sort of denotes a certain amount of focus on restaurants and recipes and what's trendy and what chef is doing what. And that's just not the stuff that I'm most interested in. I'm much more interested in just making life as delicious as possible.
Right. In your book, you write that it actually pains you to think about all the thoughtless eating that takes place in the world. What do you want us to know about how to enjoy our food more?
Well, really, it's, you know, I want people to come away understanding that whenever you eat anything, even the simplest, most burrito, as you said in your introduction, or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, that you're making choices. You're constantly making little choices about how you eat something and what you eat and the way you eat it. And if you just make yourself aware of the choices that you're making, you can make better choices that will help you to make your life more delicious. It's not about having a fancy culinary degree or spending a lot of money. It's just about thinking a little bit more carefully about what you're doing when you eat.
And there's a lot of science in this book. I mean, it's not real heady science, but you've definitely considered the real technicalities of eating well. Would you call what you do food science?
It's science-y, but it's science-y in the same way that Stephen Colbert is truthy. You're right. Look, I'm not a scientist, although I do sometimes wear a lab coat for web videos. So that's got to count for something, I think. But but there is real science in the book. I mean, I talk, for instance, in great detail about surface area to volume ratio. You may remember that term from high school biology class. It's the ratio between the surface area of a food or any object in relation to its volume. And so this is a really important issue in something as simple as, let's say, ice cubes, okay? Because ice cubes that have a lot of surface area in relation to their volume are going to melt very quickly. Ice cubes that have very low surface area in relation to volume will melt slowly. And so sometimes ice melting quickly is fine or good, but other times you don't want it to melt too quickly. If you're drinking a nice cocktail or an iced coffee, you want that drink to be chilled without necessarily being totally watered down. And that's why you need to think about the shape and size of your ice cubes, or even like a piece of fried chicken. The more surface area it has in relation to the volume, the more crispy fried exterior you're going to get, the crispier that fried chicken will be. So when you're confronted with a pile of delicious fried chicken, look for the fried chicken with the most surface area.
Well, and to go back to
that's real science, right, Veronica? Doesn't
I think it's science. I can pick out a craggy piece of fried chicken as well as the
there
next person and feel scientific. I know it now that it has a scientific underpinning.
That's right.
But you're really thinking closely about this, obviously, like looking at the ice cubes example that you were talking about. You, for example, examined spherical ice cubes in a cocktail versus a big cube, and you found that one has definite advantages.
That's right. I mean, technically speaking, the ice cube with the best surface area to volume ratio, meaning the lowest, so the slowest melting ice, is ice that's shaped like a sphere, like a baseball. A single baseball of ice will melt slower than any other ice. But to me, it has certain problems, namely that if you only have if you're just drinking like a liquor straight up and there's not much liquid in the glass and you put a sphere in there, only the very bottom bit of that ice is even touching the beverage. And then also when you tilt the glass back to drink, because it's round, it kind of rolls to the lip of the glass and hits you in the face, which is also an unpleasant sensation. So I like the big sort of like a single Rubik's cube of ice. It's not quite the lowest surface area to volume ratio, but it's almost the same, and it fits better on your face.
Well, let's tackle another one that's pretty common this time of year. People are dipping chips. I guess people dip chips any time of year. How do we get the most out of our chip dipping?
Yeah, but you're right that, I mean, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, college football, Super Bowl not too far away. It is. I bet chip dipping spikes in the next month or two. I mean, I would say a few things about chip dipping. I mean, I'll ask you, Veronica, if you have a triangular tortilla chip, the standard issue classic triangle.
Uh-huh, gotcha.
And you have a bowl of guacamole.
Yum.
When you hold that chip and you go to dip it, do you hold the chip by 1 point and dip 2 points of the triangle? Or do you hold a straight edge and dip 1 point?
That's easy. I always dip the single point because I feel
Why?
Like it gives me a greater leverage so that the chip doesn't break. I don't know. And it's also to get that big wide part into my mouth, I feel like is messy.
Interesting. All right. So you strike me maybe as someone who's a little bit conservative by nature. You take the safe route. Right. But you're right. You're right that holding a straight edge and dipping 1 point does give you more leverage, and it does reduce the chance for breakage, which, of course, is one of the saddest things that can happen when you're dipping a chip. But it also gives you a smaller surface area for guacamole.
That's true.
So you're getting less guac. Leading with the point does have a nice advantage when you're going with, like, if it's a seven-layer dip or something, where you have, like, a melted cheese that you want to pierce. That's a good advantage. But if, you know, the kinds of people who are sort of, you know, I'm more of a, I eat with gusto, I'm a bit of a risk taker, but I bet I lose more chips in the dip than you do. I hold 1 point and dip 2 points, which gives me a bigger surface area for dip, but also greater chance for breakage.
Well, and we're not going to stop there with you. You've gone completely rogue on the idea of chip scoops versus the triangular chip. You found a whole new way to eat chips when they're the scoop kind.
That's right. The scoop I like the innovation, but I find that they kind of break a little too easily. And also, when you put them in your mouth right side up, the vertical walls of the scoop, I find that they kind of cut the roof of your mouth. I don't know if you've ever had that, but cutting of the roof of the mouth is a condition that I identify in the book as Captain Crunch's complaint. It's a very, very, very serious medical condition for an eater. Like
it
me.
Is unpleasant. I have to agree
yeah.
with you.
Right. No, like the roof of my mouth, I should have it insured by Lloyd's of London or something, I think. But I was interviewing a structural engineer on the topic of chips and scoop chips and things, because that's actually my job now. And he was saying how the dome is such a powerful shape in engineering. And then it hit me. What is the scoop chip but an upside down dome? So if you take a scoop chip and turn it upside down and put it on your fingertip like a thimble, you can run that thing through cream cheese and it will not break. It's almost indestructible. It's amazing.
What's the etiquette on that? If people see you sticking your finger in the chip and then, you know, gliding it through the cream cheese, have you broken any sort of rules there?
I mean, is there a rule against being awesome? I don't know. I don't know what kind of parties you go to, Veronica, but...
Well, you're painting me as a conservative chip dipper here who doesn't have fun at parties.
I know. I'm sure you let loose in other ways.
Well, what about cheese? I'm really into cheese. And one thing that you tackle is which side of the bun the cheese should be on to get the best cheeseburger. What do you think?
Right. This is something I talk about at length in the book, which is a concept I've identified as the proximity effect. Anytime you take any bite of any food, whatever part of that bite is in closest proximity to your tongue, that flavor will be accentuated. So I recommend that you make a cheeseburger with the cheese on the bottom. That brings the cheese closer to your tongue and accentuates cheesy goodness, which I think is something we can all get behind.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're talking right now with the author and host of The Sporkful, Dan Pashman, about his new book. It's called Eat More Better. He also has that blog called The Sporkful. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have any burning food questions to ask our guest today? What about food innovations or helpful food tips to share? Are you an enlightened eater who's learned specific ways to do things that yield a better food experience. Call us at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Got a couple videos up there from Dan Pashman, one about how to dunk a donut, and another a recipe with Thanksgiving stuffing bread for a sandwich. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with author, podcaster, and eating expert Dan Pashman. And he's making the case for how we can become more enlightened eaters. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Dan's book is called Eat More Better, How to Make Every Bite More Delicious. And we'll go to our first caller now. We have Russ joining us from Monroe. Hi, Russ.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I don't know if you've ever encountered this, and I really enjoy this subject, but you get certain things out like a sandwich or a burger, and a lot of times the toppings will be congregated in certain spots or all in the middle, maybe just one pickle. I believe that when like a sandwich and a burger is made, that any topping that's on it should be spread evenly across the entire surface, that each bite is exactly like the other bites.
Uh-huh. Well, those are some good points, Russ. Thanks a lot for that. And Dan, what do you think? Do you think that every flavor component should be a part of every bite, or do you think it's okay to have a little variety?
Well, I think Russ and I are certainly kindred spirits. I talk a lot in the book about what I call the debate between bite consistency and bite variety, which is exactly what you put forth. Should all the bites be the same in a food, or should they be different? And I think, as a general matter, it varies based on the food and to some extent based on your personal preference. But in the case of sandwiches and burgers, which I do consider to be part of the sandwich family, I agree with Russ that you want bite consistency. The sandwich structure is specifically engineered for bite consistency because you build it from bottom to top, then you eat it from left to right. And so you're building these vertical layers. Every layer should be in every bite. But one thing that I recommend that you can do, to especially with condiments and sandwiches and burgers, I'm a big proponent of dipping on a per-bite basis as opposed to spreading everything on top. And it doesn't work so much with mushrooms and onions and those things, but in terms of spreads and condiments, that way, when you're putting mustard on your burger or ketchup or whatever it is, if you slip and put too much on, well, now, you can scrape it off, but you're already in trouble. If you have it dipping well, then you can control. You can have bites with more, bites with less, bites with none. So I agree with Russ.
A dipping well. Okay, well, Russ, some ideas there, and you've met a kindred spirit about that. And we're going to go next to Chris. Chris is joining us in Green Bay. Hi, Chris.
Hello. What I've been doing lately with, I like buying these natural hot dogs, natural casings, a little higher quality hot dog or a good brat. Instead of using the big buns where you get all that bun, what I like to do is take tortillas, like a burrito-sized tortillas, and heat them up and put the hot dog in there, and then maybe four different types of shredded cheese, and take some spicy pickles and chop them up, dice them, and then either ketchup or mustard, and using that instead of the big doughy buns that seem to be everywhere.
Wow, that's innovation, Chris. That sounds like a little bit of okay. What do you think about that, Dan?
I think that's great. Chris is right on the money. I think that, I talk at length in the book about ratios, and the ratio between a hot dog and the bun is a really, really crucial one. And I actually recommend that people buy half as many buns as they buy hot dogs and cut the buns in half or even into thirds. You really just need, unless you want a great bun, most hot dog buns aren't that great. They're not great bread. So they're really just like a handle so that you're not eating your hot dog with your hands. So just take a third of a bun and latch it onto the end of the hot dog and focus on the hot dog, especially like Chris is getting. He's a wise man. He's getting quality hot dogs with natural casing. The natural casing is so great. It makes hot dogs so much better. So that's where you want your focus. You don't want mediocre hot dog buns getting in the way. And one quick tip I'll give Chris, that actually I learned this from Weird Al Yankovic when he was on the Sporkful podcast with me. If you take a flour tortilla, run it under water for just a few seconds, just get it wet, and then throw it in a nonstick pan for 30 seconds or a minute on each side, and it kind of puffs up and crisps up and gets real nice and doughy. It's delicious.
Wow, Weird Al taught you that.
That's right. Never know where you're going to learn these things.
Well, speaking of grilling, as you say something that's a little bit of a sacrilege here in Wisconsin, you say that we probably shouldn't be grilling our hot dogs.
That's true. I think that grilling tends to dry them out a bit, but in part because I think that if you want a unique hot dog crisp, take Chris's lead and get a hot dog with natural casing. That's a special kind of crisp. But actually, what I think is better is boiling hot dogs. And part of what led me to that conclusion was my time spent living in the Midwest. I lived in Chicago for a while. I've spent time in Wisconsin, even went to a Packers game at Lambeau. And that's where I learned about parboiling brats before you put them on the grill, which I know is a bit of a controversial issue. I know not everyone in Wisconsin parboils, but I think that that's better, especially with a brat, because a brat is raw. A hot dog's already cooked, but a good brat, you're going to buy it raw. And if you're going to leave it on the grill long enough to cook it through, it's going to dry out a bit on the outside. So by cooking it in liquid, you get it as juicy as possible.
Nice. And as we wrap up here, I've got a little bit of time, but I want to ask you about pancakes. You have something called pancakes with bacon rebar. What is that?
Oh, it's waffles. Bacon rebar. And yes. And so this is a great trick. And this is, there's a lot of stuff in the book that's really fun for kids. And this is one of them. If you have a waffle maker at home, cook up some bacon, pour half the waffle batter into the waffle iron, and then you layer the bacon on top, and then you pour the rest of the waffle batter in, close the waffle maker, and the waffle will cook around the bacon. And it's like waffle reinforced with bacon. And you can even do it with like chicken fingers, frozen peanut butter cups. I actually tried it once with White Castle burgers.
Amazing.
And you need a sturdy waffle maker, but it's a lot of fun and often delicious.
Excellent. Well, Dan, thanks so much. You've given us a lot of ideas.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Dan Pashman, creator and host of the food-centric podcast. It's called The Sporkful. His new book is called Eat More Better, How to Make Every Bite More Delicious. And don't forget, you can find a couple of videos, a recipe, and some advice for dunking your donuts up on the Central Time Facebook page. Coming up Monday on Central Time, we'll talk to Radiolab host Jad Abumrad about how getting lost and confused is a key experience when it comes to innovation. And despite what we might think, the divorce rate is actually falling in America and has been over the last 20 years. We'll find out if the era of big divorce is finally over. And in Wisconsin, we'll learn about Wisconsin life and through the lens of winemaking culture. It's coming up Monday on Central Time. Monday morning from 6 to 9, it's the Joy Cardine Show. Coming up Monday at 8, money can be a tough topic of conversation to have with a family member, but it doesn't have to be impossible. In this week's On Your Money, Joy Cardine and financial planner Kevin McKinley have advice on making those tricky talks a little easier. That's Monday morning at 8 on the Joy Cardine Show. Here on Central Time, we want to cover the stories that matter the most to you. Chris Molina is one of our producers, and he's here to talk about how you can have a say in what you hear on Central Time. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, hey, Veronica. You know, as a producer on the show, I'm always trying to find the people, issues, and questions, around the state that matter to you. Maybe voices that we don't hear from, stories that we don't hear about all that often. So we want to hear from you. What do you want to hear on the show? We want your suggestions, your ideas, your feedback. What do you want to hear from us on Central Time? What stories are you interested in? Tell us about the people who are making a difference in your community, the concerns you have in the state or your country. Tell us the questions that you have that no one else is asking or answering.
And for people who hear this and think, ding, 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 I've got an idea, how can they get in touch?
Well, there are plenty of ways to get in touch. Facebook is always a really easy and quick way to get a hold of us. We're checking that throughout the day. Head on over to the Central Time Facebook page, send us a message. You can also send an email to centraltime@wpr.org or call our hotline. That is 855-683-4522. And we'll be checking that throughout the coming week.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, Chris.
All right. Thanks, Veronica.
I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out. News is coming up next on Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.